Ruben Rodriguez.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you. First, I want to personally thank the organization for this festival for inviting me. I'm very honored to be here today. And also, I have to thank Jason. Where is Jason? I think it... Jason, who paid for my trip to here so I can be talking to you. And, well, what I have for today is a presentation on the upcoming version of the Triskel GNU Linux system, which is a distribution that I probably understand nobody knows. Who knows about? Who have heard about? Well, some of you. Okay. As you may know, there are a lot of GNU Linux distributions, like 500 listed in places like DistroWatch. They have many distributions for every possible usage you may want. So why another one? Why? What makes Triskel interesting? Well, you know, I'm sure, about distros like Ubuntu, or like Debian, or like Fedora, OpenSUSE, and so on. But if you think they are free software distributions, you are slightly wrong, because they are mostly free. They include, all of them, non-free pieces of software. They include non-free drivers and non-free programs. But there are a few distributions that don't. One of them is Triskel. The other ones are distros like Nuisance. Who knew about this distro, Nuisance? One, two, very little amount of people. Another distros that are free are things like Musix or Ututo, that are even less known to the public. Why is this? Why are so little distros that are free, fully free? Because there are a handicap with having a fully free system. You can have drivers for things like NVIDIA cards or Intel wireless, or you can have freedom, fully free, a fully free system. And every major distributor, like Debian or Ubuntu and so on, choose to compromise this purity, let's say, and they included any possible firmware file or non-free driver that could, in their view, improve usability. It might be true that it improves usability, but it comes with a big problem, which is hardware vendors know that big distributors don't care that much about freedom. So if they don't publish specifications, or they don't publish firmware files, and they just publish binary format firmware files, distributors will still include support for them, instead of saying what they will, if they really cared, would need to say, which is, we are not distributing this crap, because it is not free software, and we are free software distributors. So, someone has to take the plunge and say, we are not going to do this, and we want, mainly, the main reason for this project is to raise awareness on big so-called free software projects that are not doing things really well. One of them is Ubuntu, which is, I think, a distro which right now is like one half of the GNU Linux desktop users are having installed. So it is a big problem, because it's the common knowledge of people is that Linux works for every machine, and it is not true. It needs extra non-free components. One of the things we want to do is raise awareness in this project, on this problem, for the Ubuntu project, and other things that need to be raised. The discussion is with accessibility, which is why I've been invited to be here today, because Jonathan helped me to understand the problem with the old versions of Triskel that weren't really accessible. And it was because we weren't paying attention to that being a problem. And it happens in several sections of what a distro is, that you have to think of all the possible users, not just the big standard user, but also of the minorities, and also without keeping track of the freedom you're offering. So since the previous version, we started to work on accessibility, which for the previous version was an easy task to do, luckily, because after Jonathan pointed me out some ideas about how to improve the accessibility, it was very easy. We just were missing two or three programs and libraries, and we changed a bit the settings, and it was all good. So the problem was that we as developers for the system weren't paying much attention to this problem, but we embraced the accessibility problem since then, and we have been working to improve this. But the other interesting thing I want to tell everyone about today is, for this version, we had a lot of technical trouble. I'm going to show you a bit of the system running. This is this version we have here, which is talking already, is based on the latest Ubuntu edition, which is on Eric. And with this version, a lot of the system components were greatly upgraded, like GNOME went from the 2.x branch to the 3.x branch, which is a huge change. And this time, for this version, maintaining accessibility in a good level was a much bigger effort than before, because all the things that you cannot see when you use the system, but are beneath the libraries and the core of the operating system, most of them are new, and most of them, like it sometimes happens with free software, when we want to make something new, we wipe the underneath our own feet, and we no longer have a place to stand. We want to do things so radically that we end up having a half-assed product for a time, and then we catch up. This is what is happening with GNOME right now, which one thing I want to raise awareness with the GNOME project right now, I think they are finally coming along with this, is that GNOME right now is not paying the enough attention to freedom. This is GNOME 3. It doesn't look like any other GNOME 3 distribution you might find today. This looks pretty much like our previous release, which was based on GNOME 2. Why we didn't use all the new stuff GNOME has been hacking on? That doesn't work unless you have a 3D accelerated graphic card. And to have that, you need, in most cases today, non-free drivers. So if you have an Intel card, it will work. But if you have an NVIDIA card, you will need to use either free drivers that are very experimental and will most likely crash, or you will need to use the non-free NVIDIA driver. If you have an ATI, an AMD card, or a Radeon card, you have no choice. All drivers are non-free. They say the Radeon driver is free, but it is not, because it needs a non-free blob, firmware blob, to work. So what's the problem with GNOME right now? They didn't think of the users who may choose not to install those drivers. And for those, you will have what they called a fallback, which, if you think of it, is like a second-rate desktop experience. If you have a 3D accelerated card, then you have the new code with the new aspect and the new usability. If you choose not to install these non-free drivers, then you go to a fallback, which, no matter how good it is, this is still a fallback, especially tailored for people who are not using non-free, who are using free drivers. So what we did is, like we did with the previous release, we are not including the new GNOME interface. We are only including the fallback, but we tuned it so it will work as well as it did in the previous release. So it is pretty much, looks pretty much the same as our previous Triskel release. And it has, I think, as much accessibility as it had. But it took a lot of extra work because of all of these changes and all of these problems that GNOME and Ubuntu weren't paying attention to, which is mainly freedom. So since not many of you have ever seen or tried Triskel, I can show you around a bit, but as it is customary with showing a product live in a conference, it will crash. And it is a beta version, so it double crash. It's not connected to the PA, but it's talking because... I don't know if you can hear it, but that's the Orca screen reader. Oh, by the way, if you were paying attention, wait. Shut up. When it was booting, and after it finished booting, it showed the FSF logo on the booting process, and on the final step, the system automatically loads this page, which includes some videos and some stuff about free software. Because this edition, this particular edition I'm using for the show, is the one that is, it is included with the FSF membership card. It's a USB card. I have one. It's like that one in the drawing. If you are an FSF member, you will have one of these cards already. If not, I encourage you to join as a member, and they will very kindly send you one Triskel loaded USB card. And I have also, of course, encouraged you to instead become a member of the Triskel. Let's have some competition here. I have to they have a lot of money already. Basically, it's a very, very, very tiny project. And we have started a project to have a membership and to also give users this much shiny and much better looking USB card that I'm having here for self-day, if you want one. But let's go back to showing you a little bit of what Driscoll looks like. We wanted to make it a very easy to use system. So in a way, one criticism we have sometimes is that unless other distros, which are based mainly on GNOME, they're more radical with the placing of the menus and the desktop design. We are more classical. We wanted to make it easy for mainly Windows users to come to Driscoll and its Windows 95 paradigm. I think one simple bar at the bottom and pretty standard interface. And we have plenty of free software included. And let's start by talking about why our browser has this funny name, which is a browser. It doesn't really have a name. It is in fact Firefox. You can tell that it is Firefox with some minor changes, but it is still pretty much this the standard stuff. Why did we change the name? Well, there's a reason for it, and it's a freedom problem with Firefox. Once again, the core ideas of the project is to make awareness of people like the Mozilla Foundation, which are really not that committed in the end to freedom, in some small details that they need to change. And one of them is that Firefox, if you download a tarball with Firefox in it, that is not really free software. Because one of the freedoms you don't have, you cannot distribute it for a fee. You cannot charge another person to have a copy of it, or if you include it in a bigger distribution like Driscoll itself, if I did that, I could not sell this USB thingies because I will be not following the trademark regulations from the Mozilla Foundation. They don't allow you to charge for a modified or unmodified product called Firefox, and if you modify it, you have to change the name. So what we did is we get rid of all the naming, and we call it Ubuntu called it in its moment when it's kept as a browser, and this loophole. This way of making a project not really free for commercial purposes happens in other projects. It happens with Ubuntu itself. You cannot sell Ubuntu CDs or Ubuntu loaded USB keys or anything like that unless you get rid of all the branding from Canonical, because it is under a trademark agreement which, despite all the licensing being free software, like using GPL everywhere, it's not enough because they are using a trademark legal restriction anyway that don't allow you to distribute it in any possible way you will want. So you have one of your freedoms cut off. Those are the things that we do with Triskel every day, finding these loopholes, these problems, that I know they are not being enforced. You can buy online CDs from Ubuntu. You can buy CD bundles with Firefox on them. But still, it needs to be talked about. It needs to be fixed. So we are doing these changes, and I'm going ranting all over the world, as it happens, like today, to make sure the people involved in these projects, which are big and very interesting and very useful projects, but they need to pay attention to these details with the freedom of their final users. More things I can show you with other one other problem this Firefox have is that if you want to install add-ons, it will show you a list of add-ons from the Mozilla Foundation page, and they list free and non-free stuff on there. So we cannot do that. We cannot, one of our programs, one of the programs we distribute, cannot recommend our users to install non-free software. So we have our own extension list that it is not loading because this is a live event. No, it is not loading because I don't have an internet connection. But if I had, it will be shown a list of extensions or add-ons that are selected to be, are checked to be completely free. This problem we also have in the past with OpenOffice. OpenOffice used to have a listing, and they still have probably, a listing of add-ons that some of them, most of them are free, some of them are not. So we needed to modify our version of OpenOffice to make it stop from recommending non-free software. One problem we had with that is that if we wanted to modify OpenOffice, again, we will need to change the branding because modified versions of the program cannot include the official trademark. So we, at that moment, have had a bit of a hack. We didn't modify the packages that include a mandatory configuration override. Luckily, we don't have to do any of that things anymore because LibreOffice, which is the Office Suite included today, this project, which started as a fork from OpenOffice, is much freedom-friendly, and they have a list of they have a policy for their list of add-ons, which is much better. They only include free software, so a lot less work in there. And well, most of the rest of the stuff is pretty standard. And now is when I want to start making you participate a bit, because it's more interesting this way. So how many of you know about this, how many of you thought that Ubuntu, for as an example, was like free software? Are you aware of any other distribution that are that is like fully free? Do you know any other? Yeah. Is there a name for
Parabola?
Yeah. That's a very good project indeed.
What?
Parabola.
Parabola is a project which is Arduino,
yes, that's an
FM. Very nice. It's mostly hacker oriented. It's I do recommend when I'm asked what should I use. I don't always say use Jessica because it's very nice. But for a hacker that is information, which is learning how to do stuff in the free world, Parabola is very nice because it's a bit rougher. So you have to polish it yourself. You have to get into it. It's much fun that way. But they are also working to make the acting Linux people understand they are not doing it. If there's a fork, there must be a reason for it. That's the thing with this a browser or the FSF, the GNU version of Firefox, which is called Icecat. It's mostly the same thing, but they also include some extensions to improve the privacy of the user. We do one thing in that regard too, which is a browser will reject cookies from third party pages when they're browsing. That's a setting that I don't know, but Mozilla is keeping it as on by default. So in Firefox, you are leaving traces everywhere, and you are giving information through different third party websites. Every time there's a these web counters or these plus one buttons or all that stuff, you are leaving traces everywhere. And we are trying to make the Mozilla people understand that they are not doing very well in terms of privacy. They are not doing very well in terms of software freedom with their offering non-free software in their pages, and they are not doing well with trademark licensing, which takes me to another idea, which is the license, the fact that you can choose GPL or any other free software license is not the only thing about making a program free. There are other details, like if you add on top of it another non-software related but still a license, a piece of legal code, you can actually make the program non-free. And there are even free licensed illegal programs. Like one thing you cannot do with a free operating system is watch a movie. You cannot watch a DVD. It's illegal that you do. If you go and buy a DVD and you own this piece of plastic and you play it using nothing but free software, you are committing a crime. And this is another thing that needs to be better known by the public, because it is not only illegal, but we have to make sure people know it, because many distros like Linux Mint will make it work. You will never notice that you are doing something illegal. So they are including a program. I will explain. And why is it illegal, even if you own this CD? The CD is the DVD. Sorry, is has an encryption, DRM protection, they call it, that doesn't allow you to copy the contents. But if you have a program which is able to read the DVD, it has to break the code to do so. Otherwise, you need a program which is which includes the key, the actual key, with a license from the people who sell the DVD standard. So, if it is, if you want to make a free program which plays a DVD, you need to license it, under the restrictions from the DVD people. But that would mean you cannot choose to distribute it under the DPL. So if you want to make it DPL, you need to make it crack the code in the CD. And that is illegal if you are not intending to copy the CD. If you want to play for yourself, for your private owner of the product, it is still not okay, because what the law says is you cannot break the code, no matter what. If you are doing it for a lawful purpose, we don't care. It's still illegal. So there's no way you can play a DVD with free software. What we used to do? We used to include the library, and Cisco will play for you the DVD. But again, that wouldn't make sure that the people understand there's a problem. It happens the same as with the Mozilla licensing problem. It is not being enforced. We are, you are not liable. You are technically liable, but nobody will sue you for playing a DVD for yourself that you pay, no matter what software you use for. But still, if we include the library like Linux Mint is doing today, nobody will know that it is a problem. And with DVDs it was a big problem, but with Blu-ray discs it's much worse. And with Blu-ray, the DRM is so packed up that not only it is illegal, but it's really fucking hard to make it work. So we could also include a driver, a codec to break into Blu-ray encryption, because like with DVD encryption, it is very bleak. It's not protecting anything. It's a legal hack. It is there. Like if you have a wall for your property and it's this big, you can jump, but that's not the protection. The protection is in the law. It's the fact that you jump over, which is protecting your property, not the wall. With the DVDs and with the Blu-ray, it is not the encryption. The encryption was broken years ago. That was not a problem. The problem was with the law. And that is the final step of all of this. We need to take free software one step further and fight with it for our rights. Because we are always talking about our freedoms. Why do we say our freedoms and not our rights? Because we don't have the right to read the code of every program. We may have the freedom to read the code with a free program, but there's not a law that says we the people have the right to read any code to any programs that you can allow. But there should be a law, he said, because these four freedoms that all this stuff is based on, and these four freedoms, which I'm sure the set guys that are closing the event later will talk you more in depth. These four freedoms are just that, freedoms that we are constructing for ourselves, but they are not protected by any law, they are in fact being attacked by many laws that we need to get rid of. And I am a foreigner, I'm from Spain, but our globalized world works in a so weird way that your laws affect me, some of my laws affect you, because there are trading agreements between the USA and the UA. Like, it is illegal in here that you play a DVD because you have this law, which is the DMCA. But it's supposed not to affect me because I'm European. But we have the European Copyright Directive or something like that, which implements the same stupid idea for Europeans. So we need to make these four freedoms for laws, for rights, for everyone. We need to get rid of the final, that's the next step is to make those laws protect our rights. And the next, the final step is to get rid of non-free software. That's the final goal of this. It was the start of pretty much when I was born, I think, in 1981 was the GNU project born. 81? 83. Oh, I was 1 year old. So I was not much involved in that part of the process, but I'm helping to carry the torch right now, but we are not that many people working in the rights and freedoms part of free software. Most people work coding, which is great. It's amazing work a lot of people is doing around the world. So we can have free software. We can have free programs, but we need better laws. We need to raise awareness on things like trademark licensing. Patents are something we need to get rid of very fast. And I really hope the patent system will die soon, because it's another thing. Well, in the case of Driscoll, I might say, our policy is we don't care. If there's a patent for something, we could get rid of the program. Let's say we cannot distribute this because even if we have a free software program for it, like free software for playing an MP3 sound file, if we get rid of everything that is patented, we will end up with a blank CD because double clicking is patented. Everything is patented. So you cannot get rid of everything. And my position, my personal position in this is, if it was technically possible to get rid of it, we will be helping patent enforcement. We will be obeying a bad law, and if a law is bad, we should obey it. So the final step is to raise awareness for all of you, for all the public. So you join, and even if you cannot code, you can protest, and you can vote, and you can change things. You can, in the case of, I don't know very much about American politics, but I know you can write your representatives, right? And you can ask for better laws to be written. There are many things to be get rid of. Why do I try specifically to change the laws of a country? I'm not in. Because sadly, your laws affect the rest of the world in a very, very important way. So you are the one who needs to change it first. So I don't know how much time did I use, but I would like to have some questions for the rest of the time. Yeah.
Do you have KDE on Trisco or?
Yeah, we have several editions. This is the standard edition. This is intended for most of the people, but we, our community, very by very curious people who want to try everything, who want the latest everything, and they are in those asking, I want a version with my favorite desktop and with my favorite programs and all of that. We cannot make every possible combination, but we have this GNOME based edition. We have in the making KDE.
How did you install it? KDE.
Version. This is not finished yet, but we are working on it. We have what we call Trisco Mini, which is based on LXDE, and it is intended for netbooks and very powerful computers and for all computers, because that's another of the great things about free software is that we are concerned about making it light and not fall into this this thing of making new programs so much more consuming, so you will need to buy new hardware because non-free software vendors and hardware vendors are very connected and they want this game to be on constantly, but we don't care because we are not selling anything. So if we can make your 1998 computer work, we will make sure it will still work today. And you can work, you can make work with 10 to 15 years old computers with Trisco Mini. I've used it with from Pentium 2 onwards. It's just, you laugh, but this is laughable here. But I've been in Peru, and in, I have a connection with South American users that write me, and they have really big problems because they don't have access to new computers, and they need something, and they download the latest distro, the latest Ubuntu or whatever, and it will not work. There's no way to install that. So that's another thing that, like with accessibility, and I cannot thank this guy enough for opening my eyes to the accessibility problem. That at that time, I was also unaware of that problem. That in some countries, they need simpler software with less specific features because they cannot run big things like LibreOffice. They need something smaller because it's the only thing they can use. That's why we have this version, and we are working in another one, which is for educational purposes, which is including the Sugar desktop. Anyone of you know about the Sugar environment? A little bit of you. The Sugar environment is the software running on OLPC computers. You may know about OLPC, you know? These are I think, better known as the $100 computers, that are the $100 laptops. It's tiny toys for kids, for development countries. This is a software, I wish I had internet right now, but it is designed for kids up to 12. And this is being used already, not our physical version, but yeah, we have over there.
Would you like?
Yeah.
No, it's not a one laptop per child.
No, but in fact, one interesting thing is that the one laptop per child was the project pushing so small cheap computers will exist. So you have this computer right now because the mobile PC started this this idea. And it got stepped on the way. So it didn't get to be as big as it could have been. But there are OLPCs being deployed in like 25 countries nowadays. And they have like 3 million or 2.5 million computers running on Sugar. And we are taking this Sugar learning environment and put it in a three-scale phase. So even if you don't have these OLTC computers, you can install it in your school or to your kids, and they can have this experience without those computers, which are, by the way, not for sale. So, more questions? Yeah, Jonathan.
Time.
Oh, we don't have time. Okay. That's it.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.